Recorded live.
Yeah, racist is a new nigger of the 21st century. Okay, if you're a racist, you're basically on the bottom rung of the federal bureaucracy's love list. They love you the least, right? So this is Pastor Eli James, along with Pastor William Fink, another installation of Christogenos, and we're going to be continuing our series on the Book of Isaiah. I think we finished off at the last verse of chapter 35, correct, Bill?
Yes, we're right at the top of 36. I have a rundown because we're about to get to it. I'm going to have a lot of notes and things tonight on the siege of Jerusalem.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I'd like to start. I don't know if you have any opening remarks. I'd like to start off with a rundown of the deportations as they are in the Bible. I mean, it might take 5 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted to back up to Isaiah chapter 34, verse 15, real quickly, because I had kind of an insight about this. There shall the great owl make its nest and lay and hatch and gather under its shadow. Of course, it's very evocative of Bohemian Grove, right? The great owl.
Well, yeah, it's an ancient pagan worship symbol.
Yes, yes. And there shall the vultures also be gathered, every one with its mate, you know, like Bill and Hillary and George and Barbara. Okay. So these are the vultures, and they're all members of Bohemian Grove, you know, where they go into their satanic ritual. So yeah, every once in a while, you know, you look at a verse again and it evokes a current current event. Yeah. So please, you're going to talk about these tribes.
Well, right. Right now, we're about to come. You know, Isaiah 36:1. We're about to come to an event that that's dated by most archaeologists to have happened around 701 BC.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it may have been as early as 715 BC. There's a lot of problems with dating in this period.
Okay.
But I thought I'd just give a quick rundown of the deportations as they appear in the Bible, because most people, it's just an ominous book to read the whole thing and find out where they are. And in 2 Kings 15:19, the first Assyrian invasion of Israel is described.
Okay.
And Tiglath-Pileser was more or less bought off by Menahem, the king in Samaria.
Okay.
But whenever you see a nation starting to buy off its enemies, like we're doing with China today and placating, you know that it's an empire in a serious state of decline.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, the Romans, they started to buy off the Goths in the early part of the 5th century, and by the later part, they were done. They were history.
That's, yes.
That's just the way it works. 2 Kings 15:29 and 1 Chronicles 5:26, Tiglath-Pileser takes captive Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh east of the Jordan.
Okay.
Now, I believe that started in 741, but I think that was 741 B.C. It's really immaterial. I know you date that to 745 generally.
Right.
2 Kings 17:3-6, Shalmaneser takes Samaria and much of remaining Israel away captive. Now I probably could have scanned that today, and I didn't. I probably should have.
Uh-huh.
Because I have scanned the next event, 2 Kings 18:13, 2 Chronicles 32:1, and here in Isaiah 36:1, in the 14th year of Hezekiah, Sennacherib takes all the fenced cities of Judah, and according to one ancient Assyrian inscription that archaeologists have found and deciphered, over 200,000 people were taken on one occasion.
Right.
A fenced city is a city large enough to have walls and gates, although surely not as formidable as those surrounding Jerusalem.
Right.
Now, Sennacherib effectively leaves only some escapees and the inhabitants of Jerusalem behind.
Right.
He takes everybody else in Judah.
Yes.
So that's the divorce of Judah from Yahweh, and Judah, the normally perceived division between the 10 tribes and the 2 tribes, and the 10 tribes going into Assyrian captivity, that's really false.
Well, James confirms it in 1:1, James 1:1, to the 12 tribes scattered abroad greetings. So even James understood that all 12 tribes were part of the captivity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now I have a link I'm going to put in the chat room as soon as I can get to it.
Okay.
The I have a PDF file online on Chris Degenia that's actually a PDF file from ancient Near Eastern texts relating to the Old Testament, which is a book of ancient Assyrian and Hittite and Israelite and Syrian and Egyptian inscriptions.
Okay.
And in that book is a translation of the Assyrian monument that was found that is actually detailing from the Assyrian point of view this captivity of Judah.
Okay.
Sennacherib boasts in it that he locked up Hezekiah like a bird in a cage. And really, that is one of the first instances of, you know, in the records of political spin.
Yeah.
Because as we see in this chapter, Sennacherib, he suffered a big defeat at Jerusalem. His army was wiped out, and it cost him his life. But before his own sons killed him. His own sons killed him.
Yes.
And because of I guess because of the disgrace that he suffered, losing 195,000 men or whatever it was.
Right. And that was prophesied by one of the prophets, too, that he'd be killed by, not in war, that he would die not in a wartime situation.
Well, his own sons killed him and took the kingdom from him.
Right.
But his inscription that he left behind before he died, was more or less an early instance of political spin.
Sure.
He suffered a big defeat and then bragged that he left Hezekiah locked up like a bird in a cage.
Right.
Well, when really that's just a, he's covering up for that defeat, basically.
That's right.
It is what he's doing. And it's pretty, I think it's entertaining. To read the two accounts.
Well, yeah, it is indeed early spin.
Yes, it's definitely early political spin. Mm-hmm. I just put the link in the forum, christogenia.org/site/ Isaiah 36 program, and the PDF is there from that that those two pages that translate that inscription in ancient Near Eastern text relating to the Old Testament.
Okay, very good. Okay.
Now the 2 Chronicles 33:11, and we're actually getting past this because we are here right now. We're at where 2 Kings 19 is in the historical books.
Okay.
Sennacherib's failed siege of Jerusalem is recorded in 2 Kings 19, and that's almost exactly parallel in many places to Isaiah chapter 36.
Right. Right.
2 Chronicles 33:11 is very vague, and it's probably in the reign of Esarhaddon.
Okay.
Who didn't become the king of Assyria until 681 B.C.
Uh-huh.
And he took Manasseh, king of Judah, captive to Babylon, but then he later restored him. Now, if we look at Ezra 4:2 and Ezra 4:10, we see that Esarhaddon is quite active in Palestine, and especially in bringing people into lands formerly vacated.
Okay.
Now, it's likely that he also was still taking some Israelites captive.
Yeah.
And that would fulfill the 65-year prophecy of Isaiah, which I believe ran from 641 to 676 B.C.
Okay.
I'm sorry, from 741 to 676 B.C., that in 65 years, Ephraim would no longer be a nation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if it started in 745, it doesn't really mean a whole lot, because Esarhaddon took, and that would end it in 680 B.C.
Right.
And Esarhaddon took the throne, by all accounts, in 681.
Okay.
Now, no one would have been around to record these things, so we don't have them in the records.
Yeah, you mean of our people would have been.
Well, right. Mm-hmm. The few that are left are still being carted away.
Right.
Yeah, and the Levites are gone, and the social structure and political structure is broken.
Yes, yes. Okay.
2 Chronicles 36:6, Nebuchadnezzar takes the temple treasure and Jehoiakim off to Babylon. And in 2 Kings 25 and 2 Chronicles 36:20, that's the final Babylonian captivity of Judah.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm going to put a plug in for a book that doesn't belong to us. It's J. Llewellyn Thomas, The Assyrian Invasions and Deportations of Israel.
Okay.
I always thought that was probably the best book available to explain the deportations and the surviving archaeological evidence associated with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I would recommend that book to anybody for an understanding.
Yeah,
of
that's
the
just kind of a small booklet, like 50 pages, as I recall.
Well, right. It's a small booklet. It's available at it's available at artisanpublishers.com has it. I know they have it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of secular evidence of these deportations. Of course, the mainstream churches have no interest in this story, and neither do the Jews, because they claim they're the only Israelites on the planet.
Right.
Yes.
When Samaria is taken, as described in 2 Kings 17, 3-6, there is also a surviving Akkadian inscription from that.
Mm-hmm.
Explaining that 20-something thousand people from that city alone were taken into captivity.
Okay.
And that's I don't have that on my site, I don't think. And I don't have it for this program because we're already past it. I didn't think of it.
Yeah.
I should have thought of it last week, in other words.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Maybe I'll add it to, during the week, maybe I'll add it to the Isaiah program that it's corresponds
right.
with.
Yeah. Understood. Okay. Yeah. All right. Any more from...
that's it. That's the deportations from the Bible in a nutshell. Those references that I gave.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So we have here according to the biblical rendering here, the pronunciation is Sennacherib, and that's what I go by. And you're pronouncing Sennacherib, I think.
Well, it doesn't.
So people know that I'm not talking about somebody else.
Right, but we can't yet, Sennacherib, Sennacherib, Sennacherib.
Right.
We don't know which vowels were accented.
Right.
There's
right.
no way to tell.
Yeah.
From ancient Akkadian cuneiform.
Right.
We're lucky we could read the letters. That
right,
stuff's
right.
crazy.
I'm just bringing it up so people know, that you and I are talking about the same person here, right? Okay.
Right. And and that's Sennacherib or Sennacherib. The end part of his name is cherub.
Okay.
That's
makes sense.
Cherub.
Right.
That's also a word used by the Assyrians.
Mm-hmm.
And that word described the winged bull with the head of a man.
Ah, okay, right.
And that word appears very often in the Akkadian inscriptions. There's no doubt that a cherub is a sphinx. Basically.
Right, right, yes. So you're breaking the word down into two parts, and that makes the most sense, right?
Well, right. Well, that's what it is. Let me look in and see how Bible Works defines it. I really never checked.
Right. Right.
But I'm going to...
Well, while you're doing that, I'll just start on Isaiah 36, verse 1. Now, it came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah that Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came against all the defense or fortified cities of Judah and took them. Okay, so there's evidence right away that these people... Now, it doesn't say he killed them. It doesn't say that, he massacred these, although probably certainly a certain amount did and were, but it says he took them, okay? But it doesn't say where, where he took them to, okay? So we have to, consult secular history to find out where he took them to, okay? Did you find that reference?
Yes, they don't define it the way I would define it. They break it into three parts.
Three parts.
Sin from the sen part, and ak. Ak is a Hebrew word that means brother.
Okay.
And they read it that way, and then they read the end from a verb that they really don't explain.
Don't explain. Okay.
Sin multiplied brothers.
Yeah.
But they don't. I think that I prefer my own interpretation a little better.
Yeah. And sen or sin, it would be the moon goddess sin. Isn't that correct? That's where that syllable would come from?
Well, right, and it may mean, the cherub of the moon goddess sin.
Yes, very good, very good.
Yeah, but I don't, they're trying to break that second half of the name into two parts, but the Hebrew version doesn't have that vowel, and they admit that in Bible Works, and it's Sennacherib or Sennacherib.
Yeah.
Because that hef could be a ch or an h.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And,
okay.
And if you look up Ham in your Strong's Concordance, you'll see that he transliterates the word cam, C-H-A-M, which is why Carchemish is the city of the people of Ham. Well, where Ham is Cam, C-H-A-M.
Right.
That's those two are
Ham,
interchangeable
right.
often in Hebrew.
It's the guttural pronunciation, which
Exactly.
Yeah, which German and, of course, Yiddish still retain today, even, you know, and other languages do too.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Verse 2. And the king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh from Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem to King Hezekiah with a great army. And he stood by the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the Fuller's Field. Do you have a precise location for us here? The conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the Fuller's Field?
No, I don't, but I would like it. It might be the near the Pool of Siloam.
That, okay.
What I would guess.
Yeah.
And where the well the Assyrians wouldn't know about Hezekiah's tunnel,
right?
Where the water conduit
that, yeah.
was, but it's possible that that's the part of the wall that he stood by.
Uh-huh.
And if he saw the pool, he still may not have seen the moat that filled it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's possible that this is from the Hebrew perspective, that he simply stood by the wall there.
Right.
And the pool is on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's can only be a guess. I would like to, if that that link that I put in the chat room, my Isaiah 36 program link,
yeah.
Now that is, there is also a video linked there to that page.
Oh, okay.
At the bottom, you'll see a link to a video.
Okay.
And that video is a short video that I found on YouTube. And it's Warren Shaft and Hezekiah's Tunnel.
Oh, okay.
And I may as well talk about that now.
Sure.
This Warren Shaft is called that because it was discovered by an archaeologist named Warren
mm-hmm.
in the early 1800s. And it's actually the very shaft that David used to conquer Jerusalem from the Jebusites.
Okay.
Okay. In 2 Samuel 5, 6 to 8, and I'm going to quote it from the NAS here. Now the king and his men went to Jerusalem against the Jebusites, meaning David,
yes.
the inhabitants of the land. And they said to David, you shall not come in here, but the blind and lame shall turn you away, thinking David cannot enter here.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, David captured the stronghold of Zion, that is the city of David.
Right.
And David said on that day, whoever would strike the Jebusites, let him reach the lame and the blind who are hated by David's soul through the water tunnel. Now this water tunnel that David's referring to is called Warren's Shaft today.
Okay.
And it's actually a tunnel down through the mountain of Jerusalem that has an exit to the spring of Gihon
uh-huh.
at the bottom, at the base, and they carried water up into the city from it.
Okay.
Okay. Now, Hezekiah did not like that situation.
Right.
When the city was under a siege. Okay. And Hezekiah actually covered the spring of Gihon, had his men build a covering over it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in preparation for the Assyrian attack on Jerusalem.
Right. That's right.
He covers the spring to disguise it, and he changes the course of the spring to enter into a tunnel which he had his men dig.
Yeah.
And this tunnel slowly rose into the city of Jerusalem.
Right.
So that water would come into the city, they would have a water supply and be able to withstand a prolonged siege.
Right.
2 Chronicles 32:30. The same Hezekiah also stopped the upper water course of Gihon and brought it straight down to the west side of the city of David.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And that's a description of the building of Hezekiah's tunnel.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah, very good. So
that's how they withstood the siege, the Assyrian
right.
siege.
Yeah, they couldn't have lasted long without water. That's for sure. That's for sure. Okay, very good. So there's all kinds of archaeological and historical evidence that all of these, you know, chapters in the Bible we've read so far are all backed up by archaeology. Simply no doubt about it. Okay. All right, so verse 3. Then came forth to him Eliakim, Hilkiah's son, which was over the house, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah and Asaph's son, the recorder. And Rabshakeh said to them, say you now to Hezekiah, thus says the great king, the king of Assyria, and this would be Tiglath-Pileser at this point, right? Is that who we're talking about?
No, this would be Sennacherib.
Oh, no, so, right, Sennacherib, right, okay, forgot. What confidence is this wherein you trust? I say you, but they are but vain words. I have counsel and strength for war. Now on whom do you trust that you rebel against me? Okay, so basically he's telling them, well, you people don't have a chance to fighting against us. Why don't you just give up now? Lo, you trust in the staff of this broken reed on Egypt, whereon if a man lean, it will go into his hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to all that trust in him. So he's telling your league with Egypt will not.
Well,
help.
Well, right, and there's also biblical. That, yes. There's also archaeological evidence of this.
Okay.
That, you know, kings have seals, and every man has a seal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the king's seal would be used a lot more than ours. He would have officers that were permitted to bear his seal and stamp all the official documents with his seal.
Right.
And all the king's property and many other things were stamped with this seal. And king, you know, in a big kingdom, we produce documents constantly. I mean, I wouldn't doubt it wasn't much like Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
And they're all sealed. Yeah. Well, all the proclamations and laws and revenues and every, you know, it's there would be many. And many of these seals, because they were so common, that so commonly used, many of them have been found.
Uh-huh.
And we actually have Hezekiah's seals. There's a collection of them in museums.
Okay.
And the archaeological provenance is not disputed. I mean, there are a lot of fakes in the
sure.
world, especially in Palestine. But the archaeological provenance of many of these seals is not disputed. It's well known.
Uh-huh.
Biblical Archaeology Review, July, August 2002, page 42. Authentic seal impressions found in and around Jerusalem, which are known by their wording to have belonged to Hezekiah.
Okay.
Contain depictions of Egyptian scarabs.
Hmm.
To me, this indicates that his attempts to ally himself with Egypt as a political defense against the Assyrians is a proven fact.
Right. It's indicated on the seal. Right. Yeah. Why would he have Egyptian scarabs on
well, the seal? Well, right. It wasn't a Hebrew. It was not typically a Hebrew icon.
That's right. That's right. Well, the Hebrews weren't supposed to have icons.
well, right. That too.
Yeah, right. Yeah, now Hezekiah's seal, I think one of the problems in identifying the ancient Israelites was they were forbidden to make images of themselves, too, right? So that none of these Israelite kings, we don't have
Well, right. That's the problem we have in the Jew lies. It's
right.
harder to – it would be a lot easier to dispute if they had artwork like the Greeks had.
Right.
You know,
yes.
The Jews wouldn't be able to hide and claim that identity.
Right. Well, it says that David was fair and ruddy.
Well, right. We have a few descriptions, but only a few.
Yes. Very, very few. Yes. Okay. All right. Verse 7. But if you say to me, we trust in Yahweh our God, is it not he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah has taken away? And said to Judah and Jerusalem, you shall worship before this altar. So he's saying you can't even trust in Yahweh, right? Verse 8, now therefore give pledges, I pray you, to my master, the king of Assyria, and I will give you 2,000 horses if you be able on your part to set riders on them.
Now let me say that pledges are hostages.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and that is a custom.
Uh-huh.
That was common in Greece, in Rome. It's a custom that... That, you know, it's part of our migrations to me are proven through our customs.
Yes, well.
And when you see that there's so many aspects of life that are mimicked or copied or belong to the Greeks and Romans as well as to the Assyrians and Persians.
Right, right.
And this is one of them. Whenever a king subjected a nation, the royal house and the noble houses of that nation would give up hostages, and they would be taken back to that capital city.
Yes.
You know, Rome would take hostages back to Rome, and they'd put these boys in the best houses and give them the best educations.
Yeah, they were treated well,
And it would be a Roman education.
Mm-hmm.
And that way that they would win converts to their way of life, and when these men went back to their home countries, that they would help spread Roman culture. And in the hope that the people would be friendly to Rome.
That's exactly what Herod did with two of his sons.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. He sent them to Rome for education.
Well, probably just polluted many Roman
lands. Right. Yes, exactly. Yes. Now, of course, the King James doesn't give any hint that we're talking about hostages here. The note that it has here in my expanded King James Version says, make an agreement with, for pleasure.
Well, Bible scholar. Well, so-called Bible scholars don't know anything about history.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Right. So instead of trying to figure out the history behind these words, they simply say, this means to make an agreement with. A pledge, right. So they don't understand that we're talking about hostages here. Very good. Verse 9. How then will you turn away the face of one captain of the least of my master's servants and put your trust on Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? And am I now come up without the Yahweh against this land to destroy it?
And he's basically talking about how hard it's going to be for Hezekiah in Jerusalem to fight against the Assyrians. Yet, the challenge back in verse 8, therefore give pledges, I pray thee, to my master, the king of Assyria, and I will give you 2,000 horses if you're able to put riders on.
Right.
In other words, he can't even muster a cavalry.
Sure.
Yeah, all of the surrounding towns and villages have been taken.
Yeah.
Well, what does he have in the city? Merchants and lawyers?
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And then he says, Yahweh said to me, go up against this land and destroy it. Now, do you think he's using Yahweh mockingly here?
Oh, yes. Rabshakeh is challenging the God of Israel here.
Right.
He's very impiously challenged Yahweh here, and for that reason, the Assyrian army is going to be destroyed.
Yes. Okay.
And not for Judah's benefit, but for the blasphemy against Yahweh.
Right. Okay, very good. Verse 11. Then said Eliakim and Shebna and Joah to Rabshakeh, speak, I pray to you, to your servants in the Syrian language, for we understand it, and speak not to us in the Judahites' language, in the ears of the people that are on the wall. But Rabshakeh said, has my master sent me to your master and to you to speak these words? Has he not sent me to the men that sit upon the wall that they may eat their own dung and drink their own urine with you?
Yeah, well, that's, after a long siege, if there's no water and there's no food stores in the city,
right?
That's what men are reduced to. There are countless examples of that.
That's right. Very good. Verse 13, then Rabshakeh stood and cried with a loud voice in the Hebrew language and said, hear you the words of the great king, the king of Assyria. Thus says the king, let not Hezekiah deceive you, for he shall not be able to deliver you. Neither let Hezekiah make you trust in Yahweh, saying that Yahweh will surely deliver us. This city shall not be delivered into the hand of the king of Israel. I said, don't believe him when he says that. Verse 16, hearken not to Hezekiah, for thus says the king of Assyria, make an agreement with me by a present, and come out to me, and eat you every one of his vine, and every one of his fig tree, and drink you every one the waters of his own cistern. Of course, he's saying, well, if you submit to us, you'll have peace, right? Peace and prosperity. Verse 17, until I come and take you away to a land like your own land, a land of corn and wine, a land of bread and vineyards. So he's obviously telling, well, we're going to deport you.
Well, right. Exactly.
Yes. And my understanding is that it was at this time, I forget the source, that they were actually building Nineveh, if I'm not mistaken, or adding,
Well, Nineveh should have already been built.
Okay. They must have been adding suburbs to Nineveh because they needed slaves for this entire building project. Okay.
It's well, what they were also doing is that they had a lot of problems with the tribes to the north of Assyria, and they were using the Israelites as a buffer.
Right, as mercenaries or as slave warriors. Yes, very good. Okay, verse 18. Beware lest Hezekiah persuade you, saying, Yahweh will deliver us. Have any of the gods of the nations delivered his hand out of the hand of the king of Assyria? Where are the gods of Hamath and Arphad? Where are the gods of the Sepharvaim? Again, Sepharvaim, that's where the Sephardic Jews came from, folks. And have they delivered Samaria out of my hand? Who are they among all the gods of these lands that have delivered their land out of my hand, that Yahweh should deliver Jerusalem out of my hand? But they held their peace and answered him not a word, for the king's commandment was saying, answer him not. Okay?
Now let me say that when the Assyrians took Samaria, the God of Samaria was not Yahweh.
Right.
I mean, Yahweh is the God of Israel, there's no doubt.
Yes.
But the Samaritans were worshiping the golden calves.
Right.
And Isaiah made that pretty plain a few chapters ago.
Right, yeah, the Samaritans. Yeah. Was that
well,
that
was the Samaritans, Ephraim.
Right. Yeah, and that was Bel, right? Isn't that the golden calf?
Well, not necessarily. Bel means Lord.
Okay.
Bel is the Lord of whatever, the Lord of the city, the Lord of the nation,
okay,
the Lord
so
of the tribe.
General term. Okay.
There's many Bels in Mesopotamia.
Okay. All right. Then came Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, that was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah the son of Asaph, the recorder, to Hezekiah with their clothes rent, and told him the words of Rabshakeh. So they realized they were in deep doo-doo, right? Chapter 37. And it came to pass, when King Hezekiah heard it, that he rent his clothes and covered himself with sackcloth and went into the house of Yahweh. And he sent Eliakim, who was over the house, and Shebna the scribe, and the elders of the priests covered with sackcloth, to Isaiah the prophet, son of Amos. And they said to him, thus says Hezekiah, this day is a day of trouble and of rebuke and of blasphemy, for the children are come to birth, and there is not strength to bring forth. It may be Yahweh your Elohim will hear the words of Rabshakeh, whom the king of Assyria, his master, has sent to reproach the living God, and will reprove the words of Yahweh your Elohim has heard. Wherefore, lift up your prayer for the remnant that is left. So Hezekiah is requesting that Isaiah pray for Judah right here.
Right, and literally that's the remnant that is found. Now,
okay.
Now let me say that in verse 3 where it says, thus says Hezekiah, this day is a day of trouble and of rebuke and of blasphemy.
Okay.
That word blasphemy is a bad translation.
Okay.
It's 5007 Neyetzah, and it means scorn or provocation. In other words, Rabshakeh didn't only denounce the people of Judah, of Jerusalem, but he provoked Yahweh.
Yes.
You know, he basically made the pronouncement that Yahweh was worthless.
Right. Yeah, and the proof of that is in all of chapter 36, where he repeatedly, scornfully used and mockingly used the name of Yahweh.
And this word blasphemy in verse 3 should be scorn.
Okay.
Or provocation.
Yes. Okay, very good. All right, verse 5. So the servants of King Hezekiah came to Isaiah, and Isaiah said to them, thus shall you say to your master, thus says Yahweh, be not afraid of the words that you have heard, wherewith the servants of the king of Assyria have blasphemed me, speaking of Yahweh, Yahweh speaking through Isaiah. Behold, I will send a blast upon him, and he shall hear a rumor, and return to his own land, and I will cause him to fall by the sword in his own land. This is the prophecy that I mentioned earlier, that he would die after the siege.
Yes, his own sons, actually,
yes.
Too.
Verse 8. So Rabshakeh returned and found the king of Assyria warring against Libna, for he had heard that he was departed from Lachish.
Now, Lachish and Libna are cities of Judah southwest of Jerusalem.
Okay.
And they're mentioned in Joshua chapter 15, 39 and 42.
Okay, very good. Verse 9. And he heard say concerning Tiraka, king of Ethiopia.
Or Cush.
Or Cush, right. He is come forth to make war with you. And when he heard it, he sent messengers to Hezekiah, saying, thus shall you speak to Hezekiah, king of Judah, saying, let not your God in whom you trust deceive you, saying, Jerusalem shall not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria.
Now let me read that from the Septuagint.
Okay.
Because it's quite different.
Yes.
Now Tiraka, the king of Cush, all right, because this is not necessarily the Ethiopia to the south of Egypt.
Okay.
There's still a Cush in the east at this time.
Right.
And there's still a tribal Cush who were evidently subject to the Assyrians at this time.
Yeah, that would be old Babylon, right.
And Tiraka, king of Ethiopia here, is actually in, he's in the Assyrian, he's a captain in the Assyrian army, basically.
Okay.
And in the Septuagint 9 and 10 read, and Tiraka, king of the Ethiopians, went forth to attack him, meaning Hezekiah.
Uh-huh.
And when he heard it, he turned aside and sent messengers to Hezekiah, saying, thus shall ye say to Hezekiah, king of Judea, let not thy God in whom thou trustest deceive thee.
Right.
In other words, he's saying that to Hezekiah that Yahweh is deceiving Hezekiah.
Okay, right.
Saying
right.
Jerusalem shall not be delivered mm-hmm. into the hand of the king of the Assyrians.
Yes. And it could be where it says heard it, and when he heard it, could this be a reference to Isaiah's prophecy in verses 6 and 7? And then Tiraka is saying to Hezekiah, don't listen to this prophecy.
Well, yes.
Okay.
It seems to be that it was announced that Jerusalem would withstand a siege.
Yeah.
You know, like the hell with you. We're not going to make a deal with you, Rabshakeh.
Right.
But we're going to withstand the siege.
Yeah. So again.
So that would have been announced.
So Tiraka is doing the same thing that Rabshakeh was doing in chapter 36. Okay.
Yes.
All right, verse 11. Behold, you have heard what the kings of Assyria have done to all lands by destroying them utterly. And shall you be delivered? Have the gods of the nations delivered them which my fathers have destroyed, as Gozan and Haran and Rezeph and the children of Eden? Interesting.
That, well, right. The children of Eden, I wouldn't get too excited about this word.
Oh,
here.
Man, don't dampen my enthusiasm.
Well, Strong's Advanced Lexicon says, and for this word in this passage, Eden,
yeah.
meaning Eden equals pleasure, a place conquered by Assyria, probably located in the northwest of Mesopotamia.
Okay.
And they, too, should check their history.
Yeah.
All right? Well, in all of the, throughout the Akkadian inscriptions, in Akkadian, the word Eden is also used.
Uh-huh.
And it means the steppe.
Okay.
It's a reference to the steppe. The steppe, the grasslands, which run, you know, north of the, in northern Mesopotamia and north of the Caucasus Mountains, all those grasslands are, we consider them the steppe to this day.
Uh-huh.
That's what the reference is to.
Okay.
Okay. And it's the reference is very common in Akkadian inscriptions. And here I would read this, the children of the steppe.
Okay.
And not those of any particular nation, but that there were always the more barbarian, if I have to use the term,
uh-huh.
people scattered from the Adamic world,
right.
who had migrated up into the mountains, and the Farsi and Persia, that the Persians down by the sea always had a problem with,
right.
and the Assyrians likewise and the Medes always had a problem. With the white tribes that had wandered up into the hills.
Right, right.
You know, into the Caucasus Mountains.
And those would have been Japhethites.
Well, yes, they would have been Japhethites or other Shemites.
Mm-hmm.
And they were considered the children of the steppe.
Okay. Which were in Talassar? Is there a physical location for Talassar?
Well, Talassar actually means an Assyrian hill or hill of Asher.
Ah.
Which indicates to me that the Assyrians sent war parties into the lands north of Assyria
uh-huh.
and brought back some of these people, deported them,
right,
and forced them to settle in Talassar.
Right, right. Okay, very good. Verse 13, where is the king of Hamath and the king of Arphad and the king of the city of the Sepharvaim, Hena and Iva? And Hezekiah received the letter from the hand of the messengers and read it, and Hezekiah went up to the house of Yahweh and spread it before Yahweh. And Hezekiah prayed to Yahweh, saying, O Yahweh of hosts, God of Israel, that dwells between the cherubims, you are the Elohim, even you alone of all the kingdoms of the earth. You have made heaven and earth. Incline your ear, O Yahweh, and hear. Open your eyes, O Yahweh, and see. Hear all the words of Sennacherib, which he has sent reproach to the living God. Of a truth, Lord, the kings of Assyria have laid waste all the nations and their country. So he's fully aware of what they've been doing, verse 19, and have cast their gods into the fire, for they were no gods, but the work of men's hands, wood and stone. Therefore they have destroyed them. Now therefore, O Yahweh our Elohim, save us from his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that you are Yahweh, even you only. Then Isaiah...
Now let me interrupt. This is a good example for us today.
Okay.
You know, well, we today should pray for our own preservation, but
right.
not for our own sake.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we should pray not for our own preservation, but for the preservation of our race and our kindred.
Right.
Not for our own sake, but for Yahweh's sake.
Right.
For the sake of his oath to Abraham and for the sake of his creation and its preservation
right.
in the face of those who want to destroy it.
For the salvation of Israel. The literal flesh and blood Israelites through Yahweh and Yahshua. Absolutely. Verse 21. Then Isaiah, the son of Amos, sent to Hezekiah, saying, Thus says Yahweh Elohim, God of Israel, whereas you have prayed to me against Sennacherib, king of Assyria, this is the word which Yahweh has spoken concerning him. The virgin, the daughter of Zion, has despised you and laughed you to scorn. The daughter of Jerusalem has shaken her head at you. Whom have you reproached and blasphemed? And against whom have you exalted your voice and lifted up your eyes on high, even against the Holy One of Israel? Okay. Is he talking about the Israelites doing this?
No. This is the word which Yahweh has spoken concerning him, meaning Sennacherib, king of Assyria.
Okay.
But which is the end of, where thou hast prayed to me, meaning Yahweh, against Sennacherib, king of Assyria.
Okay.
This is the word which Yahweh has spoken concerning him, Sennacherib.
Yes. So this is Yahweh's response to Rabshakeh and the other guy.
Yes.
Okay. Continuing. Verse 24, by your servants have you reproached the Lord and have said, by the multitude of my chariots am I come up to the height of the mountains, to the sides of Lebanon, and I will cut down the tall cedars thereof and the choice fir trees thereof, and I will enter into the height of its border and the forest of its Carmel.
Now this is exactly the way Ezekiel laments in Ezekiel 31. He laments these Assyrians.
Right.
Many years later, and says that the Assyrian was the tallest
right.
cedar in the garden,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and they would have been primarily white people, right?
Well, they were definitely white, and they
mm-hmm.
were Shemites.
Yeah.
There was a Hittite admixture
mm-hmm.
in Assyria.
Okay.
It's very clear when you look at the Assyrian monuments, you see a lot of straight-nosed
yeah.
Aryan-looking people, and then you'll see a lot of hooked nose, Hittite-looking people.
With money bags, right.
well, right, and there's no doubt to me that the ancient Hittite empire,
uh-huh.
which the Assyrians ended up consuming all of that land,
yes.
you know, subjecting all of that land.
Right.
And there's no doubt that there weren't some Hittites in the Assyrian
right.
court and the Assyrian religious system, and just like they get into every nation.
Mm-hmm. Well, now this can't have been too much long after the Egyptian league with the Hittites. Any idea how many, you know, generations?
Oh, it's 600 years later. The Egyptian league with the Hittites, that was in the, you know, that was towards the time of the Exodus. Really, it was before the Exodus.
Before the Exodus.
The Thutmose II married a Hittite queen,
okay.
and that produced Thutmose III, the bastard son, who was probably the first one to subject the Israelites to slavery.
Okay, so there would have been a residue of Hittites left from all that.
Well, there were pockets of Hittites all over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were spread out. Just like today, there's pockets of English left here and there.
Right. Even in Britain, there's a few English.
Yeah, right. There's a couple left. Using that as an example.
Yes.
Because England had a great empire, and it's gone for the most part, but there are Englishmen spread all over the world as a result of their empire.
Right.
And it would have been no different with the ancient Hittites.
Yes. Yes. Okay, verse 25. I have dug and drunk water, and with the sole of my feet have I dried up all the rivers of the besieged places. And that would be speaking of the rivers would be people, right? Have I dried up all the rivers of the besieged places? Have you not heard long ago how I have done it, and of ancient times that I have formed it? Now have I brought it to pass that you should be to lay waste defense cities into ruinous heaps. So in other words, Yahweh is saying, well, this is my doing. Don't be too proud of yourself. Verse 27, therefore their inhabitants were of small power. They were dismayed and confounded. They were as the grass of the field and as the green herb, as the grass on the housetops, and as corn blasted before it be grown up. What does blasted mean here? Before it be grown up, scorched.
I would think blasted. It would probably mean Corn is first. Oh. The word as corn is added here.
Oh, okay, right.
Okay.
Right.
And blasted before it be grown up, as the grass on the housetops and blasted before it grown up, it might mean to actually be threshed or harvested.
Okay.
I would have to catch up to this verse and check it out.
So corn is more of a general term for grain, probably we would use.
Well, yes, corn is, you know, the English didn't, I know there are some inscriptions from the 13th century, you know, some depictions. But the common Englishman did really not know North American corn.
Right.
Until the 1700s, 1800s.
Right, what we call corn.
You know, maize that we call corn. Corn, in all English work, from probably even up through the 19th century, you know, the 1800s,
yes.
It is a general word for grain.
Uh-huh.
That's all it is.
Right, right. Okay, very good.
Now the word blasted.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
means, they're just defining it as it means a field.
Okay, and
as
a field before it be grown up. Okay,
yeah. Okay. It's I don't know why this word blasted. The word means a field. It's strange.
Yeah, they messed it up again. Okay.
Now there's another place. 2 Kings 19:26. It is parallel to this.
Okay,
and a different word appears according. Maybe it's only a different definition.
Okay.
Bible Works has given me a different definition, I swear.
Uh-huh.
In 2 Kings 19:26, they have 77:11, shedephah, meaning blighted or blasted thing. So it's blight.
Blighted.
But when I go to Isaiah 37:27, it says shedemah, not shedephah.
Okay.
Yeah, you understand there's a problem with one letter.
M versus F.
Yes.
Okay.
This is 77:09. And it means a field, but that's probably a scribal error.
Okay.
And 2 Kings 19:26 is parallel, and it's shedephah. It means blighted.
Okay. Well, what does it say? Do you have the verse in front of you?
Yes, I do. It says, therefore, the inhabitants were of small power. They were dismayed and confounded. They were as the grass of the field and as the green herb,
mm-hmm.
as the grass on the housetops. And his corn blasted before it be grown up.
That's verbatim Isaiah 37 here.
Well, right, but the difference in 1926, the word is a different word, a different Hebrew word according to Bible Works.
Right, and as you say, it might just be a scribal error.
And it means blighted. So we don't need the as corn.
Right.
It's the grass on the housetops that's blighted before it grows up.
Yes.
Now grass on the housetops would have very little water, right?
Right.
Yeah, you know, it wouldn't have deep roots. It would have very little water.
Yeah.
And it would it wouldn't last the summer. It would be blighted.
Yeah. Yeah, like we have trees growing in our gutters, right?
well, right, exactly. I mean, I clean my gutters out here, and I have stuff growing in them by the end of the summer, but it's
right.
You know, it doesn't have deep root, and it doesn't really take very well.
Yes. Yes. Very good. Okay, verse 28. But I know your abode, and you're going out, and you're coming in, and your rage against me. I know everything about you, verse 29, because you rage against me, and your tumult is come up into my ears. Therefore will I put my hook in your nose, and my bridle in your lips, and I will turn you back by the way which you came. And this shall be a sign to you. You shall eat this ear such as grows of itself, and the second year that which springs of the same, and in the third year sow you and reap and plant vineyards and eat the fruit thereof. So would this have been a jubilee year? Is that what we're literally talking about here?
Well, this may coincide with the jubilee, but I don't know. You know, I can't. You know, the jubilees were already a sign that we were supposed to
right.
celebrate at this time.
So this may be what this reference is to. Okay, verse 31. And the remnant that is escaped of the house of Judah shall again take root downward and bear fruit upward. That's the prophecy that they're going to come back.
Well, which it did for about, you know, this extended the life of the kingdom, this failed siege of Jerusalem,
yes,
for approximately 120 to 130 years.
Okay. Yeah, because the house of Judah was taken much later.
586 B.C.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, verse 32. For out of Jerusalem shall go forth a remnant, and they that escape out of Mount Zion The zeal of Yahweh of hosts shall do this. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh concerning the king of Assyria, he shall not come into the city, nor shoot an arrow there, nor come before it with shields, nor cast a bank against it. Verse 34, by the way that he came, by the same shall he return, and shall not come into the city, saith Yahweh. For I will defend this city to save it for my own sake, and for my servant David's sake. And, of course, this is what happened.
Well, the bottom line here, the bottom line lesson, you know, I'm sure digging this tunnel and getting a water supply into the city, it probably strengthened Hezekiah's nerve, right?
Right.
But
certainly,
in the long run, he didn't need it.
Right, right. Yes, well, because Yahweh would have protected him anyway. But that was
giving him
the idea for the water was Yahweh's doing too. Yes.
Well, yes, but he made the plans,
mm-hmm.
and even though things turned out well, the plans in his own preparation were really vain.
Yes, yes. Okay, verse 36. Then the angel of the Lord went forth and smote in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000, and when they arose early in the morning, behold, they were all dead corpses. So 185,000 of Sennacherib's soldiers, suddenly the next morning they were all dead. Okay? Verse 37. So Sennacherib, king of Assyria, departed and went and returned and dwelled at Nineveh. And then he wrote about Hezekiah being a bird in a cage, right?
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Verse 38. And it came to pass, as he was worshiping in the house of Nisroch, his god, that Adrammelech and Sharezer, his son, smote him with the sword, and they escaped into the land of Armenia, and Esarhaddon, his son, reigned in his stead. Okay, so this is what you get if you blaspheme against Yahweh, right?
Now, this Armenia is really Ararat in Hebrew.
Okay, Ararat, okay. And then, Armenia would be what, to the north of what we would consider the land of Ararat today?
The Mount Ararat is actually in northeast Turkey.
Northeast Turkey.
And it's real close to the Armenian border.
Uh-huh.
Now, Armenia, let me say, Armenia really comes from Hebrew words.
Yeah.
A mini is a part or a portion.
Okay.
Or an area or a region.
Uh-huh.
And Ar means mountain.
Right.
And Armenia really means the hill lands, the mountain lands, the mountain region, the mountainous region, the hill, the hill country.
Yes, hill country. Very good. Okay. Chapter 38, verse 1. In those days was Hezekiah sick to death, and Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos, came to him and said to him, thus says Yahweh, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live. Then Hezekiah turned his face toward the wall and prayed to Yahweh. Well, even though Hezekiah had a lot of problems and was apparently a sinner, Yahweh did answer many of his prayers and said, remember now, O Yahweh, I beseech you, how I have walked before you in truth and with a perfect heart and have done that which is good in your sight. And Hezekiah wept sore. And then came the word of Yahweh to Isaiah, saying, go and say to Hezekiah, thus saith Yahweh, the Elohim of David, your father, I have heard your prayer, I have seen your tears, behold, I will add to you days, 15 years, and I will deliver you and this city, out of the hand of the king of Assyria, and I will defend this city.
Now notice how Yahweh always used Isaiah to talk to Hezekiah.
Right.
And, of course, Yahweh could have spoken to Hezekiah directly.
Yes, he could have.
However, because he used a third party, by this we see that there is a God in heaven and he is true.
Mm-hmm.
Where otherwise, that these things may have been dismissed as the vanities of a king gone mad.
Mm-hmm.
The things which happened to Hezekiah are proven because Isaiah uttered them and not Hezekiah himself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Yeah, and Yahweh speaks through his prophets. And Isaiah was definitely one of his major prophets. Verse 7, and this shall be a sign to you from Yahweh, that Yahweh will do this thing that he has spoken, which he always does. Behold, I will bring again the shadow of the degrees, which is gone down in the sundial of Ahaz, 10 degrees backwards. So here we're talking about this, astronomical event. Okay, by I will bring again the shadow of the degrees, which has gone down 10 degrees. So the sun returned 10 degrees by which degrees it was gone down. Okay.
Now that would be a 36th of a day.
Okay.
Right. Well, there's 360.
Right.
Degrees,
10 degrees.
Right?
Yes.
It would be a 36th part of a day, which is what, about 40 minutes.
Okay. Yes.
I believe it might be about 40 minutes. I could be wrong.
Something like that. Yes. Yes. So,
it would lengthen that day 40 minutes.
Yeah, so something happened astronomically to lengthen the day. Yeah, okay, very
well,
good.
Well, to slow the, or reverse the spin of the earth, that's pretty amazing.
Yes, right. Or, well, see, bring again the shadow of the degrees, 10 degrees backward. Yeah, so it says it backed up is the literal translation.
Well, that would have to reverse the spin of the earth.
Right.
Which spins it, over 1,000 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So something definitely miraculous is indicated here. Verse 9, the writing of Hezekiah, king of Judah, when he had been sick and was recovered of his sickness, I said, in the cutting off of my days, I shall go to the gates of the grave. I am deprived of the residue of my years. I said, I shall not see Yahweh, even Yahweh, in the land of the living. I shall behold no more man, no more with the inhabitants of the world. My age is departed and is removed from me as a shepherd's tent. I have cut off like a weaver my life. He will cut me off with pining sickness. From day even to night will you make an end of me. Boy, this is some serious well, pining here that he's doing.
This is the expression of a man who is about to die.
Yes, yes. Verse 13. I reckon till morning that as a lion, so will he break all my bones. From day even to night will you make an end of me. Like a crane or a swallow, so did I chatter. I did mourn as a dove. My eyes failed with looking upward, O Yahweh. I am oppressed. Undertake for me. So, and this seems to be a legitimate humility on his part here. Verse 15, what shall I say? He has both spoken to me and himself has done it. I shall go softly all my years in the bitterness of my soul. O Yahweh, by these things men live, and in all these things is the life of my spirit. So will you recover me and make me to live. Behold, for peace I had great bitterness, but you have in love to my soul delivered it from the pit of corruption, for you have cast all my sins behind your back. For the grave cannot praise you, death cannot celebrate you, they that go down into the pit cannot hope for your truth. The living, he shall praise you as I do this day. The father to the children shall make known your truth. Yahweh was ready to save me, therefore we will sing my songs to the stringed instruments all the days of our life in the house of Yahweh. For Isaiah had said, let them take a lump of figs and lay it for a plaster upon the boil, and he shall recover. One more verse here. Hezekiah also said, what is the sign that I shall go up to the house of Yahweh? So Hezekiah being very grateful for the additional 15 years that Yahweh granted him. Okay, chapter 39. At that time, Merodach-Baladan, the son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he had heard that he had been sick and was recovered.
Flattery for the purposes of deception, as we shall see.
Okay. he's a Babylonian, right? And Hezekiah was glad of them and showed them to the house of his precious things, the silver and the gold and the spices and the precious ointment and all the house of his armor and all that was found in his treasures. There was nothing in his house nor in all his dominion that Hezekiah showed them not, okay, which was the wrong thing to do. You don't show a Jew all your possessions.
Absolutely.
Right.
You don't show the enemies of God, not even a pagan.
Right. Yeah, they have no business.
Presuming that this was, Merodach-Baladan, what was a, even if he was a white Syrian, yeah, which were the predominant race in Babylon at this time.
Uh-huh.
He was still a pagan.
Right.
He was still godless in the eyes of Yahweh.
Sure, sure. Yes. Yeah, so Hezekiah should not have done this. Verse 3.
But it's possible he was a Kenite. That there's, you know, there seems to be a struggle between the Kenites and the Chaldees.
Yes, right, right, yeah. Then came Isaiah the prophet to King Hezekiah and said to him, "What said these men, and from where came they to you?" And Hezekiah said, "They are come from a far country to me, even from Babylon." Then said he, "What have they seen in your house?" And Hezekiah answered, "All that is in my house have they seen. There is nothing among my treasures that I have not showed them." Then said Isaiah to Hezekiah, "Hear the words of Yahweh of hosts. Behold, the days come that all that is in your house and that which your fathers have laid up in store until this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left." Okay, well, first of all, Hezekiah shouldn't have showed the Babylonians what he had. Okay, that would have inspired lust in their hearts, right, to grab all that gold and stuff. Verse 7.
Now let me talk for a minute.
Okay.
This reminds me of a story, a recent news story,
uh-huh,
that somebody posted on a Christogenia forum earlier this week or last
okay.
week. And this gentleman, this white suburban male, you know, works for a living, has a wife and two kids. He has a ring that he wants to sell, a diamond ring.
Okay.
For $1,000 or something like that. He puts it on Craigslist.
Uh-huh.
And these two Negroes show up at his house, you know, and they want to buy this ring.
Yeah.
Well, they have two friends with them. So the couple that shows up at his house, they're admitted into this white family's home. And he's showing them this ring.
Whoa.
And before he knows it, okay, he has two more Negroes in his home.
Mm.
His kids are tied up. And he tries to resist and they shoot him dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, why'd you bring these aliens into your damn house?
Right.
Yeah, you know, and that was my response on the forum.
Well, they're
and
just like us.
Here we have the Bible lesson right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, don't let the alien into your house. Don't show
right.
them a thing. And don't, you know, strangers come to your door. You know, in today's day and age, you have to be, it's a shame, but you have to be worried about your own brethren.
Yeah.
You never let an alien into your home.
Yeah, our people are so brainwashed that, you know, we're supposed to trust them when we cannot possibly trust them.
No way.
We're not allowed to. We shouldn't bring them into our homes, folks. No way. Okay. Verse 7. And of your sons that shall issue from you, which you shall father, shall they take away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. And I think we can take that literally here. And let's see, verse 8. Then said Hezekiah to Isaiah, "Good is the word of Yahweh, which you have spoken." He said, "Moreover, for there shall be peace and truth in my day." So he wasn't worried about, you know, the days after his death. Okay. Chapter 40, verse 1. Comfort you, my people, says your Elohim. Speak you comfortably to Jerusalem and cry to her that her warfare is accomplished. Warfare is kind of a odd translation here.
Yeah.
That your struggle is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she has received of Yahweh's hand double for all her sins. Okay.
It might be it's that which goes forth, army, war, hair, host of organized army.
Okay.
It seems to mean not really a struggle, but an organized army.
Okay. Okay.
Her organized army is accomplished. That really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Yeah, you know, in a case like this, I would actually go see where every passage is where that word
yeah.
is.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like an odd translation, a singular translation here. Yeah. Verse 3. The voice of him that cries in the wilderness, prepare you the way of Yahweh, make straight in the desert a highway for our Elohim. And I have cross references here. Of course, yeah, this was
quoted in all four Gospels.
Yeah, in all four Gospels, yes. Very good. Verse 4, every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill shall be made low, and the crooked shall be made straight. Get ready, folks. If you're crooked, and the rough places plain, and the glory of Yahweh shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken of it. Can't wait for the day, folks. Verse 6, the voice said, cry. And he said, what shall I cry? All flesh is grass, and all the goodliness thereof is as the flower of the field. The grass withers, the flower fades, because the Spirit of Yahweh blows upon it. Surely the people is like grass. The grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God shall stand forever. Amen.
Now, that we even have Bibles today,
and
these books that were written 2,800 years ago,
right,
it is absolute proof that the God of the Bible is indeed our God and our Creator.
Yes.
And you know, I would say, where are the oracles of the gods of the ancient pagans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, they're in the dung heap.
well, right. We have bits and pieces from translation, but only through our archaeologists.
Yes.
And people, you know, it came to my mind, the Sibylline oracles came to my mind.
Uh-huh.
And a scoffer might say, well, what about the Sibylline oracles? And let me tell you about the Sibylline oracles. They were absolutely destroyed. All the original versions were absolutely destroyed when the Celts invaded Rome and burnt the capital in 390 B.C.
Mm-hmm.
So the Sibylline oracles that exist today are a forgery that the Romans tried to piece back together from memory.
Oh, like the Catholic Church.
well, yeah, exactly.
Or just about every document they have.
Exactly. So, yeah. So all the oracles of the ancient gods are really set to naught. We have Bibles that make this boast.
Yes.
And you know, it is a boast.
Yes.
And it's true. And we still have these books. And it's spread over the whole planet.
Right.
There's no doubt that the God of the Bible is true.
Yes, and of course, Yahshua echoes this in Matthew chapter 24, where he says that this gospel shall be preached in all the world, and then the end shall come. Okay, so it definitely has been preached in all the world, and these Bibles are still with us. But we have to study to find ourselves approved, right? We can't just take the word of the pulpit bastards who falsely translate, you know, so many words and misinterpret just about everything. Verse 9, O Zion, that brings good tidings. Get you up into the high mountain, O Jerusalem, that brings good tidings. Lift up your voice with strength. Lift it up, be not afraid. Say to the cities of Judah, behold your Elohim. Behold, Yahweh Elohim will come with strong hand, and his arm shall rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work is before him. Now, folks, this word reward, we get rewarded for obeying his law. Keep that in mind. If you don't obey his law, you don't get rewarded. You get punished, right? That's the way it works. Verse 11. He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with his arm and carry them in his bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, and meted out heaven with the span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in the scales and the hills in a balance. Obviously, these verses declaring the might of Yahweh. Verse 6.
Well, they also declared, they're also a messianic prophecy.
Okay. Yes.
And it was, you know, Christ has fulfilled a lot of this. Christ gathered his people in Christendom.
Yes, yes. Verse 13. Who has directed the Spirit of Yahweh, or being his counselor, has taught him?
Now let me read that from Romans 11:34. For who has known the mind of the Lord, or who has been his counselor?
Uh-huh.
That's verbatim from the Septuagint, Isaiah 40:13.
Okay. Yes. Or who has been his counselor. Yes. Okay. Verse 14. With whom took he counsel, and who instructed him and taught him in the path of judgment, and taught him knowledge, and showed to him the way of understanding?
Well, in other words, nobody did.
Of course, yes. Who could? Verse 15. Behold, the nations are as a drop of a bucket. Common expression today. It's just a drop in a bucket, right? And are counted as the small dust of the balance. Behold, he takes up the isles as a very little thing. Okay? And isles meaning territories, lands. It could be also literal islands as well. Verse 16. And Lebanon is not sufficient to burn, nor the beasts thereof sufficient for a burnt offering. All nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted to him less than nothing and vanity. He is our creator, folks. We have to acknowledge this as a fact. Verse 18. To whom then will you liken Elohim? What or what likeness will you compare to him? The workman melts a graven image, and the goldsmith spreads it over with gold and casts silver chains. He that is so impoverished that he has no oblation chooses a tree that will not rot. He seeks to him a cunning workman or skillful workman to prepare a graven image that shall not be moved. Have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told to you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he that sits upon the circle of the earth, and the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers that stretches out the heavens as a curtain and spreads them out as a tent to dwell in.
Now, I would like to say that this does not mean that the ancients saw the heavens as a curtain, but rather they compared to the majesty of Yahweh, they were like a mere curtain.
Yes.
That's all.
Yeah.
But the circle of the earth, I mean, Isaiah knew the earth was a circle.
Right.
Natural observation, possibly, but they understood that the earth was a spear.
Right, right.
In the book of Job, it says that he hangs it upon nothing.
Right.
And it shall not. There's a phrase there that's poorly translated. I guess from the understanding of the medieval Englishman that it shall not be moved, mm-hmm. but that really should be read, it shall not change its course.
Right, right. Well, this is another interesting aspect of the book of Isaiah, because we had this very historical, these last few chapters from 36 through 39, being very historical, and then with a couple of minor prophecies thrown in. And now chapter 40 is metaphysical. You know, it's an homage to Yahweh. And, so I imagine because of changes in theme like this, many theologians have assumed that these chapters were written by different people. Well, what's your comment on that?
Well, that's just ridiculous. I mean, from 41 on, they swear that another Isaiah wrote it. and they have absolutely no basis for that whatsoever.
That's a change in theme. Yeah.
Yes, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, verse 23. That brings the princes to nothing. He makes the judges of the earth as vanity. Yea, they shall not be planted. Yea, they shall not be sown. Yea, their stock shall not take root in the earth, and he shall also blow upon them, and they shall wither, and the whirlwind shall take them away as stubble. To whom then will you liken me, or shall I be equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high, and behold who has created these things, that brings out their host by number. He calls them all by names, and by the greatness of his might, for that he is strong in power, not one fails. So he has ordered the universe, folks, totally ordered it. Verse 27. Why say you, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from Yahweh, and my judgment is passed over from my God? Have you not known? Have you not heard that the everlasting Elohim, the Yahweh, the creator of the ends of the earth, faints not, neither is weary? There is no searching of his understanding. There's no way we ourselves, certainly as human beings, cannot comprehend all the things that he knows. Verse 29, he gives power to the faint, and to them that have no might he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young man shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon Yahweh shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. Now this expression here, but they that wait upon Yahweh, are we talking about, you know, those of us who know that Yahweh expects us to use his timing before we act?
To wait, to look for, hope, expect.
Yes. Okay.
That it's very, to wait or look eagerly for.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we can't get, you know, we have no authority without him.
Right.
And we'll know when it's time for us to take action. We will just know.
Yes, he will tell us.
It's easy to be caught up. Yeah, you know, and Adolf Hitler would be my best example.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, the man was a brilliant speaker. He aroused his entire nation.
Right.
He sincerely loved and cared for his kin. He was a sincere Christian, not in vain words, but in every action.
Okay.
And he failed.
Yeah.
He aroused his whole nation to his side, and he failed.
Yeah, yeah, because he didn't acknowledge Yahweh.
Well, he didn't understand the plan of,
right.
of God.
Right. Yeah, he took matters into his own hands. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay. Chapter 41. Keep silence before me, O islands, and let the people renew their strength. Let them come near. Then let them speak. Let us come near together to judgment.
Now it's from this point forward that many commentators and verse, yeah, you know, chapter 40 is really Isaiah just observed the wonders of Yahweh and the destruction of this invincible Assyrian army.
Right.
The extension of Hezekiah's life from what was considered a deathly illness.
Uh-huh.
And his healing.
Yeah.
And chapter 40 is a natural response to that.
Yes.
It's a celebration of the might of God.
Exactly.
From this great deliverance.
An homage to Yahweh.
And now I believe Isaiah turns his attention towards the dispersion of Israel. Because it's a done deal. It's over with. But, right?
Right.
Israel is, all except the inhabitants of Jerusalem are taken away.
Okay.
Isaiah turns his attention to them. And for that reason, because there's no revival of Jews anywhere in history. As a great nation.
Right.
For that reason, they doubt that Isaiah wrote this.
Oh, right. Okay, okay.
But they don't understand it. These people, none of them are Jews.
Right. Right. Exactly. Well, and that was so many people have rejected the scriptures because they know, they understand that the Jews can't have fulfilled any of these prophecies. So they must say, well, if the Jews are God's chosen people, none of these prophecies have been fulfilled, and therefore the Bible must not be true.
Well, right, but to most of them, Isaiah ends with either chapter 39 or 40. I mean, some of them put it in a different place, but
okay.
Isaah doesn't end until after chapter 66.
Right.
Rest assured.
So Isaiah number 2 is speaking now, right?
According to the Jews, Isaiah number 2 is speaking now.
Right.
They're the experts, right?
Right.
And they're all full of it. This is the same
right.
Isaiah that was speaking back in chapter 1.
Exactly. Verse 2. Who raised up the righteous man from the east, called him to his foot, gave the nations before him, and made him rule over kings. He gave them as the dust to his sword, and has driven stubble to his bow. He pursued them and passed safely, even by the way that he had not gone with his feet. Who has wrought and done it, calling the generations from the beginning? I, Yahweh, the first and with the last, I am he. The isle saw it and feared. The ends of the earth were afraid, drew near, and came. They helped everyone his neighbor, and everyone said to his brother, be of good courage. So the carpenter encouraged the goldsmith, and he that smooths with the hammer him that smote the anvil, saying, it is ready for the soldering, and he fastened it with nails, that it should not be moved. But you...
I guess back then there were some Israelite goldsmiths, possibly.
Yes. Oh, yeah, of course.
I'm just kidding.
Well, the Jews don't actually do any gold smelting. They just buy it and, you know, have it shipped from place to place. Verse 8, but you, Israel, are my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend. Okay, there's a chosen people, folks. And
that defines seed.
Yes, seed.
And it can't, nobody can define seed any different than that.
That's right.
And it's a sham. Anybody that attempts to is lying.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, this is definitely human offspring. There's no other possible meaning of this word. Verse 9, you whom I have taken from the ends of the earth and called you from the chief men thereof and said to you, you are my servant. I have chosen you and not cast you away. Okay? Well, he did cast us away for a time, for a brief time. Well, brief for him. 2,520 years. But, our people actually grew and multiplied during all that time. Verse 10, fear you not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your Elohim. I will strengthen you, yea, I will help you, yea, I will uphold you with the right hand of my righteousness. Behold, all they that were incensed against you shall be ashamed and confounded. they shall be as nothing, and they that strive with you shall perish, or strive against you shall perish. You shall seek them and shall not find them, even them that contended with you. They that war against you shall be as nothing and as a thing of naught. So this is major judgment coming here, folks.
Well, where are the Assyrians?
Right.
Where are the Babylonians?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. There's one more group I want to say. Where are they? Verse 13. For I, Yahweh, your Elohim, will hold your right hand, saying to you, fear not, I will help you. Now, our people have to make the call. Okay? If our people assume that they're saved or assume they're going to be raptured, are they going to be asking for God's help? Are they going
no,
to be asking
not
for,
at all.
Yeah.
Are they going to be asking for his judgment?
No, not at all. No, please.
No, but, they're not.
Okay.
It's a false religion. And they don't get, you know, our people are being punished and enslaved these last 100 years, and they don't even know it.
That's right.
And you can't beg for a release from slavery if you don't know you're a slave.
That's right. How did Goethe put it? He is most surely enslaved. The one who believes he, I can't remember it now. Forget it.
Well, right. It's basically, you know, the man who thinks he's free is the best slave.
Right. Yeah, yes. He who does not know he's a slave is the one who is most surely enslaved. That's a paraphrase. Anyway.
The only freedom we could ever achieve is in Christ. We have no other freedom.
Right, exactly. Verse 14, fear not, you worm, Jacob. Did you have a chance to check out this word that's translated as worm?
I'm pretty sure it means worm.
Okay, because and often there's words translated as worm that don't mean anything like worm. I was wondering if this was one of the instances. Anyway, I'll
Pola.
Okay.
Poli. You know, this is real close to Toleda. I'd like to examine this.
Yeah, okay, because there are many times where the word worm appears in the King James, and it doesn't mean worm at all. And so I was wondering if this is what one
well,
of
well, this, yeah, you know, this, I don't, it could mean crimson or scarlet.
Okay.
The dye made from the dried body of the female worm.
Okay.
Ilicus.
The dye. It's talking about the color.
And or it could be a worm or a maggot.
Okay.
I don't know where they get maggots from.
All right.
But, you know, the Septuagint does not have worm.
Because in this passage, he's uplifting Jacob, you know, telling us we're his servant, we're his chosen. So why would he suddenly interject this word worm?
The Septuagint, the word, all the Masoretic text manuscripts have worm that I'm looking at right now.
Okay.
And there's three of them, and the Hebrew. But the Septuagint and the Septuagint Greek do not have worm.
Okay.
That they have, fear not, I'll read Brenton, fear not, Jacob, and thou, Israel, few in number.
Yeah.
I have helped thee, saith thy God.
Yeah, because
he that redeems thee, O Israel.
Because it just doesn't fit the context, you know, to suddenly, not that this word necessarily demeans Jacob, but everything in this chapter is in praise of Jacob, and all of a sudden to call him a worm, it doesn't make any sense. You know, it's out of context. So
it's the Masoretic text word, it's not in the Septuagint. So,
yeah.
So I would call it into question.
Right.
I don't know if this passage exists in the Dead Sea Scrolls Bible, which is the you know, those Dead Sea Scrolls that have been found that are copies of biblical books.
Yes,
but I'm going to take this opportunity to look it up.
But it's not in the Septuagint, so that's interesting. Okay, so let me read it without that word worm. Fear not, Jacob, and you men of Israel, I will help you, saith Yahweh. And your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. Behold.
Now it is in the Dead Sea Scrolls, according to this English translation.
Okay.
Do not fear, you worm, Jacob,
and
people of Israel.
Yeah, and it's possible that the word worm or the Hebrew word for it had a different connotation from what they're translating it as. Okay.
Well, it is, but evidently the Septuagint writers just tossed it out altogether.
They didn't care for it. Yeah.
Or it was not in their Hebrew manuscript.
Right. Somebody added it. Somebody must have added it. It's certainly possible. Okay.
Well, why would, if you were a an Israelite. Why would you add that?
Right. Why? It doesn't make any sense. You know,
there's no benefit in being called a worm.
Yeah. Right. You know, I mean, if the context were, you know, humble yourself, Jacob, you know, then I could see the word worm in there, you know, but that's not the context of these passages at all. Okay. All right. Verse 15. Behold, I will make you a new sharp threshing instrument having teeth. Maybe one of his worms with teeth, right? You shall thresh the mountains and beat them small and shall make the hills as chaff.
Now, this has nothing to do with the people in Jerusalem.
Okay.
Isaiah is addressing the isles here.
Right, right. Yes. You shall fan them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the whirlwind shall scatter them, and you shall rejoice in Yahweh and shall glory in the Holy One of Israel. When the poor and needy seek water there, and there is none, and their tongue fails for thirst, I, Yahweh, will hear them. I, the Elohim of Israel, will not forsake them. Okay?
Now let me say that, you know, the Scythians destroyed, in concert with the Medes,
okay,
destroyed Assyria.
Uh-huh,
destroyed
uh-huh.
it. Ripped down all their cities. Turned them all into piles of rubble.
Right.
By 608 B.C.
Okay. Okay.
Now the Scythians were among the Persian armies who destroyed Babylon.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Now it was Parthians and Greek Israelites, and, you know, Macedonians descended from Israelites of the Egyptian dispersion,
who
eventually conquered all of Judea and all of these people that were Israel's ancient enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Israelites came back to
right.
rule
and
as Parthians, as Macedonians, as
yes.
Romans.
And as our people expanded, yeah, it became as the sand of the sea, which was fulfilled the prophecies, right?
Right, and that's the fulfillment of these prophecies.
Yes, yes, very good. Okay. Verse 18, I will open rivers in high places and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry land springs of water. I will plant in the wilderness the cedar, the shittah tree, and the myrtle, and the oil tree. I will set in the desert the fir tree and the pine and the box tree together. And, of course, symbolically, these would be different branches of the Israelites.
I would think symbolically it's the 12 tribes.
Okay.
You know, there may not be 12 trees mentioned here. But
right, right. Verse 20, and we're close to the 90 minutes, but let's finish this chapter here. So we'll go a little bit over for the 90 minutes today. Verse 20, that they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of Yahweh has done this, and the Holy One of Israel has created. Now, ladies and gentlemen, in these last couple of chapters, the relationship between us and Yahweh is totally confirmed that we are his people and no other people are his people. It's patently obvious, verse 21.
And that's long after all the Israelites are deported.
Right, right. Verse 21, produce your cause, says Yahweh. Bring forth your strong reasons, says the king of Jacob, not the king of any other people, just the king of Israel. Verse 22, let them bring them forth and show us what shall happen. Let them show the former things what they be, that we may consider them and know the latter end of them, or declare us things for to come. So that when, as we have mentioned a few times, when Abraham dedicated Isaac to Yahweh on the altar, and then that pledge was repeated to Israel later in the book of Genesis, that we are dedicated to him.
Well, when Abraham placed Isaac on the altar, everything in Isaac's loins became the property of Yahweh.
Right. Right.
Everything that came out of Isaac's body became the property of Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
There's no, all of the people descended from Isaac have
yes.
no choice.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that includes the Edomites.
Right, well.
And that's why,
yes.
I'm sorry, that's why in Romans chapter 9, Paul says that two vessels were made from the same lump.
Right,
well,
right.
One for mercy and one for destruction.
Right, but Esau despised his birthright. He threw it away.
And that's the vessel of destruction.
Right, right. Verse 23, show the things that are to come hereafter, that we may know that you are gods, yea, do good or do evil, that we may be dismayed and behold it together. Of course, that's our destiny, to become the restored immortal.
Well, right, but this is also a challenge.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, it's a challenge to the false gods.
Okay.
That, you know, show me the things that are, and this is, it's that when we get, I think, to Isaiah 45, it's more explicit.
Okay.
But this is a challenge that we have no choice but to believe our God and be Christians.
Right.
Because
right.
The false gods, they can't show the things that are to come hereafter. Isaiah is about to show a lot of things that came hereafter. Yeah, and he has been ever since chapter 1.
Yes.
And this is a challenge by Yahweh to us that our false gods can't show the things, the former things and the future things.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, now verse 24, let's read it. Behold, you are of nothing, and your work of nothing, and abomination is he that chooses you. Now, this verse also seems to be out of context.
Well, I would say so.
Yeah.
I didn't get, my notes ran out at 40. I have to admit, I didn't think we'd get this far.
Right.
Yeah, and you've been doing that to me a lot lately.
Yeah. Well, this is Isaiah's going so smoothly, right? So, but here, since we passed the end of our lot of time,
this,
let me finish.
This could be an abomination is he that decides for you.
Okay.
I would, again, let me see the Septuagint because I don't have the. Yeah, you know, there is no legitimate Hebrew. Hebrew text. So.
Yeah. Right, right.
Whence ye are and whence are you works that have chosen you an abomination. They have chosen you an abomination out of the earth.
Okay.
Your works, and it seems to be that your works
we were brought
have proven
up
you
from
to
nothing,
be an abomination.
Words.
It seems to me that our works have proven us to be an abomination.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, you know, that to me is he... Yeah. And not he who chooses you is an abomination.
Right, yeah, that is
the Septuagint is saying that the works have chosen us an abomination.
Oh, okay.
Meaning have shown us to be, I would think.
Right.
An abomination.
Yes, yes, okay. That makes more sense. Verse 25, I have raised up one from the north, and he shall come. From the rising of the sun shall he call upon my name, and he shall come upon princes as upon mortar, and as the potter treads clay. Who has declared from the beginning that we may know, and before time that we may say he is righteous? Yea, there is none that shows, yea, there is none that declares, yea, there is none that hears your words. The first shall say to Zion, behold, behold them, and I will give to Jerusalem one that brings good tidings. And again, this is not the literal city of Jerusalem we're talking about here. It's talking about us, the people of Israel. Verse 28, for I beheld, and there was no man even among them, and there was no counselor that when I asked of them could answer a word. Behold, they are all vanity, their works are nothing, their molten images are wind and confusion. So here we have a definite change in context again from all of the praise heaped upon Jacob, Israel, from verses 1 to about 23. Then all of a sudden he humbles us, right? Okay.
All right.
Yeah, right. And so every once in a while we need a bit of a scolding and being put in our place, in other words. Okay. All right, so very good. We're definitely moving through Isaiah much faster than I thought we would. But, I think the toughest chapters are the historical ones where we had to identify all these different nations, that he's talking about, the various nations that he has destroyed. Most of them are obvious, obviously the Assyrians and, the Babylonians and the Egyptians. But Isaiah talks about lesser kingdoms that he has destroyed as well, you know. And so we've gone through all of that, and we're up to chapter 42. So, Bill, thank you very much.
Well, we have quite a bit left. We have Cyrus coming up and the prophecies about Babylon falling. And we have a lot of good stuff left tonight.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we have further proof of the Cimmerian Scythians being the dispersion of Israel when we get to the end of Isaiah.
Yes, yes. Okay, very good. All right, so tomorrow night, folks, we're going to resume our discussion of the book of Ephesians. Okay. Looking forward to that. And then Sunday, I will be doing two shows. The first one with Greg Howard, we'll be doing part 4 of Angels, Demons, and Prophecy. In the afternoon, I will be doing an interview with Jeff Weekly on how to recognize the vipers in our midst, okay? And then on Monday, I'm going to be doing a special Monday show because Monday is Pentecost according to the solar calendar. It's going to be at 7 p.m. Eastern, and I'm just going to be talking about the meaning of Pentecost, okay? So a bunch of shows coming up this weekend. Thank you, Bill, for joining me once again. Lots of fun, this book.
Right, and I'd just like to make an announcement. There are a lot of people here that have not yet been to ChrisDeGetty.net.
Okay.
That have not yet, you know, connected with the voice chat server at ChrisDeGetty.net.
Yes.
And I would encourage them to go to ChrisDeGetty.net and check the Connect tab on the top menu and download the prerequisite software and connect to the ChrisDeGetty chat server. It's up 24/7. I'm sitting here probably 16 hours a day, and I keep half an eye on it. And there have been about 60 people have already connected to it.
Yes. Okay.
But it will be the future home of, if not all of our programs, at least a good part of them. And I wouldn't want to leave anybody behind leave them out in the cold, but it's a lot more stable and a much better environment than TalkShoe. And we may actually need it one day.
Yes.
You know, even if we don't move all of our programs there, you'll find a lot of fellowship there. And,
right.
Monday and Tuesday programs are almost definitely moving there in June.
Yes. Okay. Just a couple of things, because I had trouble logging on to your scheduled show a couple of days ago, and people may have some difficulty logging in. They may need your expertise, because there's problems that I had that you had to guide me through.
Well, right. And my Skype ID is WM Fink, and if anybody really has a problem, they could Skype me.
Uh-huh.
Even though it always shows that I'm offline, away, invisible, whatever, I'm here 16 hours a day, 17 hours a day. So
right. So they have to download the TeamSpeak program, and then run it, and then they have to make adjustments with their own. They have to have a headphone with speakers.
Well, if they want to speak if they want to participate in a voice chat,
uh-huh,
they should have a headphone and a microphone attached.
Right.
And that makes that situation ideal. But to listen to programs, all you need is a speaker.
Okay.
And it's I encourage them to get started on it now, because it might take them a few days to work out the little technical problems and to accustom themselves to the software. But it's really pretty easy to connect. And most of the 64 or 65 people that have connected so far, and I would say 40% of them needed some sort of assistance. You know, the people that are more familiar with computers had no problem at all.
Yeah, well, I had to tweak the volume of my microphone, as you probably recall, and then I had to get rid of the feedback in my headphones. So you had to guide me through that.
I had those problems when Boxar and I first started using the software and experimenting with it. I had the same problems.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to have those problems.
Yeah. So you might. I'm just warning people that you may have to get some technical assistance before you're fully operable as as a callee. You can listen, but if you want to call in, you may have to adjust your speaker volume and your microphone volume, et cetera, okay? There's some of the things you'll have to do. But once you get all that set up, it works really nice.
It's great. It's a much more pleasant experience than TalkShoe.
Yes, excellent.
And yes, Victor Switzer, the server's been up and running. People have been on it all week, and you're way behind the curve.
Catch up. All right, very good. Thank you all for listening. We're through Chapter 41 of the Book of Isaiah. Looking forward to all 66 chapters, and we'll see you next Friday, same time, same place. More of Isaiah yet to come. Thank you, and praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh.